Accession number 28685, Mr. George Mail, Reel 6. Now, you were just talking after you'd hit this mine off Cape of Good Hope on the 15th of May 1942, and you said that they were stumbling out from below decks. Now, where exactly were you, and what did you decide to do?
I decided that I'd better get down to the sick bay, to the theatre, and let other people deal with bringing the casualties. We'd got 24 killed, three of them were never found, and we'd got nearly 200 injured. So we were kept busy in the theatre. There were bodies everywhere. I say, blast injuries, smoke inhalation, fractures, and a variety of things. I was in the theatre for hours, and one man was brought in with his skull open and his brain protruding, hanging out a bit.
Now, what could you do for a case like that?
Well, very little. The surgeon lieutenant said, put him down there. We've got bodies lying all around us. Put him down there. We'll deal with him later. We carried on dealing with the patient we were dealing, and then we heard somebody say, water, water, please give me a drink. And this chap, with his head like this, was trying to get up, and he wanted a drink. Get him back on the table, quick. So we got him on the table, did our best, cleaned up the area, put him to the side so that his brain flopped back in, we didn't close up the wound. We put a dressing on it and gave him an injection of morphia and put him into one of the cots. He was still alive the next morning when we arrived in Simonstown, which was a small naval base, with a little hospital up on the side of a mountain. So our casualties, including this chap, went up to the hospital.
Now, are there any other specific cases you remember?
No, that's the one.
How would you treat things like smoke inhalation? I mean, what was the treatment?
Well, that's a chest problem. And there wasn't a lot that you could do about that. A person would recover from smoke inhalation, generally, once they could get it out of their lungs. And the rest were pretty straightforward injuries. During the night, while we were operating, we ran out of surgical spirit. Now, surgical spirit was used to clean up wounds. It was also used, you'd have a tray with surgical spirit in it, that sharp instruments you couldn't sterilize by boiling. So scalpels, scissors, needles were immersed in surgical spirit prior to being used. And we run out of surgical spirit in the night. So somebody, me, had to go, that we had to get special permission for a supply petty officer to go with me down to the inflammable goods store. This was in the bowels of the ship, and all the hatches between decks had all been screwed down because of flooding. So they had to open up hatches for us to get down five decks to this inflammable goods store. There was no lighting down there, but we got torches. We found the metal drum in which surgical spirit was stored, and a funnel, and I'd taken with me a gallon jar to get it refilled. It seemed to take ages to get this this jar refilled, but it, we a minute or two, I suppose, but it seemed to take a long time. And then I had to come up the ladders between the decks with this gallon of surgical spirit in my arms, and I thought, my God, if I drop this, we'd be in trouble. Very inflammable, of course. However, that we got it back, and we were all right. We'd finished the main jobs we had to do, but we, as I say, we'd run out of surgical spirit. When we approached Simonstown, there was a dry dock there, and it was empty. So we were able to go into the dry dock and attend what patients we had who needed hospital treatment up to the hospital. And then we'd overloaded their facilities. So I was sent up to the hospital. I was up there for 3 or 4 weeks working and helping.
In Simonstown?
Yeah, in Simonstown, yeah. On my first run ashore, I'd got two particular friends, Charlie Bastable, who was the senior PO, and Brian Bernard Shaw, my friend. The three of us went to Cape Town on the train. There was, we used to call it the Weinberg Whistler. It was an electric train that went at 20 miles with 29 stops from Simonstown to Cape Town. We decided we'd get the bus and go up to the cable station to go up Table Mountain. It was a Sunday afternoon, nice day. We were walking from the bus up to the cable station. A big car stopped. The hospitality for everybody was fantastic. A big car stopped. A lady with her two daughters. Could they give us a lift? Well, no, we're only going to the cable station, thank you. Well, jump in, we'll take you there. Well, I think she knew that the wind was blowing and the cable cars were not running. So we didn't get to the cable station, but she took us on a scenic drive and back to their house. She turned out to be Mrs. Harper, the wife of the Chief of Customs and Excise. They've got a beautiful bungalow. There was Mr. Harper, the chief, Mrs. Harper, and her three daughters, Eileen, Joyce, and Wilma. They'd got a son who was a pilot in the South African Air Force. Now, if you were befriended by a family ashore, that was referred to as up homers. You were going up home. I was playing rugby at the time. We played a game against the high school boys, 16-year-old lads, twice our size. 14-0 they beat us. I went back to the Harpers after the match, and their maid took my gear, boots and my rugby gear, and I got it back the next morning, all clean. This was up home for 6 months. We had wonderful experiences with them. We'd only been there a few weeks when Leslie, their son, the pilot, he was flying planes from North Africa to Jerusalem. And it came down overnight, to Russia, rather. Came down overnight in Jerusalem. And he was talking to somebody and stepped back into the blade of his own propeller and was killed. And we thought, well, that would be the end. They wouldn't want us around the house. But it made no difference. They still wanted us to be there.
Now, all this time you were attached to the Simonstown Hospital, were you?
No, I was only in the hospital for 3 weeks.
But you were in the port for...
Oh, yeah, 6 months. And this is when we... had just nuisance coming aboard. This Great Dane.
Now, tell me the background to this dog, this Great Dane, you know, just nuisance.
It was his owner had found that this dog would go missing. And every time it went missing, they would find it at Simonstown looking for sailors. Eventually, the man decided that they might as well make it over to the Navy, and this Great Dane was inducted into the Navy as Able Seaman Just Nuisance, given his own records and that sort of thing, and it befriended sailors for the whole of the time. It would come aboard the ship, it would go to Cape Town with us on the train, and it had its own bed in the YMCA in Cape Town. And if you spent a night in Cape Town, they would leave a train in the station open, where if somebody missed the last train, they could get into this one, put their ticket, clip it up behind them, behind the seat, and go to sleep on the seat. The guard, the first thing in the morning when it came along, would just take their ticket and leave them, let them carry on sleeping. When the train reached Fishhook, was a station near Simonstown, Nuisance would come, it was a corridor train, Nuisance would come all the way through the train barking and waking up any sailors who were asleep. This was the sort of thing he did. If there were any drunk sailors about in Cape Town, he'd make sure that they got looked after. He'd take them away to wherever. So that was the story of Just Nuisance, who had his own book written about him and who had a full military honours funeral.
What was the dog like? Did you actually know the dog yourself?
Yeah, it was a beautiful dog, very placid. That's Nuisance. Right, now I went down into the dock to see the damage that had been done. We were carrying 72 torpedoes and 200 depth charges to service the ships that wherever we arrived to set up a base. These had all been stored where the mine hit. And they all dropped out of the bottom. They weren't detonated, so they didn't explode. But off Cape Agulhas, there's all this ammunition on the bed of the ocean. I went down into the dock to have a look at this hole, and it was massive. It extended up to the middle deck, this armoured steel deck, and it extended right across the ship underneath. It was a hole that you could put, as I've described it, a pair of semi-detached houses in it. But it was forward of the boiler room and engine room, so it didn't affect our mobility. We were able at reduced speed to get from there into Simonstown and be repaired. 6 months, they put a new bottom in. We then left.
Left when? What month did you leave in? November.
End of October.
Right.
We found out afterwards, we were going to the Maldives in the Indian Ocean to set up a base there. Instead of that, we came back up the west coast of Africa. We all assumed we were coming back to the UK. Because we were only 60% seaworthy. We called in at Freetown, and people had a run ashore, and came back with great stalks of green bananas, because there were no bananas in England. And the next day, in the ship's orders, it was announced that there'd been big landings at Algiers, and we were going to set up a base there, and that's where we were going. Well, we didn't get there. That night, 11 o'clock, I was in my cot in the sick bay, writing a letter home, when suddenly there was a huge bang. The doors blew open, midships, smoke and some flames, and two members of the crew got up from the boiler room before the rest were battened down. They were burned badly. We got them into the theatre. The ship was healing a bit, but we got them on the table in turn, cleaned them up, put dressings on them, gave them each a big shot of morphia, and got them with stretcher parties to take them up to the wardroom anteroom to await further instructions. Well, this took about an hour. At the end of that time...
Now, you'd been hit by a torpedo, had you?
Two, in fact, it turned out. And then, an hour later, two more torpedoes hit, and then it was abandoned ship. Now, I don't remember it being announced abandoned ship, but everybody had gone. I found myself in the wardroom with Steve Hetherington, the young doc, and a midshipman. There were just emergency lights, just little blue lights. You could hardly see anything, but we got torches. And we decided we'd go through the ship and see if there was anybody about in the mess decks who couldn't get off. We came back to the wardroom. The ship is heeling over to the port side. All the furniture had gone down against that side of the ship. And the young doc said, I've sat here many a night at dinner, dying for a pee, and unable to have one until the captain gave permission to get up. Well, I'm having one now. And the three of us stood there and made sure we didn't pollute the ocean. And then we said, well, cheerio, and departed. I went out through the quartermaster's lobby, and hanging up there was the loud hailer, a tin, a big trumpet thing. Well, that might be useful, I thought. So I took it, and I went out around the after gun position and up the deck to the starboard side. You were always advised not to go over the low side in case anything fell on you from the ship. So I went up to the rail on the starboard side, sat down, took off my shoes, looked at this loud hailer and thought, I don't want this bloody thing. And I let it go, and I can hear it now rattling down across the deck. I went over the side. There was a rope there hanging, and the ship was at such an angle that I could nearly walk down the side of the ship. And the rope is dark, of course, it's black. It wasn't a totally black night. I could make out figures in the water and the wreckage and so on. The rope ended before I hit the water, so I let go, and I found myself back in the ship. I'd fallen into where one of the torpedoes had hit, but I managed to swim out quickly, and then I was swimming. There was an escort of two destroyers, the Marne, a modern one, and the Venomous, a First World War one. And the Venomous was going around searching for U-boats and dropping depth charges and setting off ferry lights and so on. The Marne had stopped to pick up survivors astern of the Hecla. I was swimming towards her, and I, amongst all the others, I saw this figure. It was the master at arms. He was standing up in the water with his hands either side of the reading desk and his feet on the crossbars of the lectern from the ship's chapel. And I said to him, Master, what have you got there? If I'm going to heaven, boy, I'm going in bloody style, he said. So I carried on. I came close to the Marne, and there was a swish beside me, and the next thing was the stern of the Marne went up in the air. She'd been torpedoed in the stern. Her after deck went up like a tin can being opened. Her gun went up, and she got a pattern of depth charges. It was like being hit in the stomach by a board when the torpedo went off. And then she got a pattern of depth charges, and they were thrown off and went into the water. And then, as is described in that article, her ammunition started going off from the
what
ammunition.
What was that like? Forget about the article. What was it like?
Well, there was explosions and flames coming up and smoke. And I decided that I'd look for something else. There were already several of our crew had been picked up, but nobody else went aboard. I swam away, and I came to a raft which was solid with bodies. And these Carly floats had ropes looped around the side so you could hang on the outside. I was hanging on to a rope, and I said, any room for another one inboard? No more bloody room in here. So I just carried on holding on to this rope. And the sea, by this time, we'd got away from the main oil slick, and the sea was very rough. And this raft went up the side of a big wave and tipped. Because of the weight of all the bodies, they all shifted as it went up the side of this wave, and the raft tipped over and they all fell in the water. This happened twice, and each time a few less came back. So then there was room for me to get in the raft. I was in the raft, and I could see the Hecla with her stern still stuck up in the air, and in the intermittently I could see the Venomous coming around, but she wouldn't stop to pick up any survivors in case she got the same treatment as the Marne. I don't know exactly how many hours I was in the water, but it was the next day.
Now, can I just ask, what were you wearing? I mean, what did you have?
Well, when I went into the water, as I'd said, I'd taken my shoes off. I'd got my pyjamas on and my shoes, which I'd taken off. And I'd got my trousers over my pyjamas. That was all.
And what were sea conditions like? How cold, how rough, how bad was it?
Well, I felt the water was warmer than the air. The wind that was blowing seemed to be very cold. Although, of course, we weren't in the cold part of the Atlantic, fortunately. I can remember being on this raft. There were just three of us on the raft, and I can remember sort of keeping down in the water because the air was cold. Our life belts, which we had to carry all the time, rolled up, were just a long sausage in a canvas, a navy blue canvas cover, with tapes on the end and a tube to blow it up. And what you did, you put the sausage around yourself and then tied the tapes up, and they got tapes around your collar, and then you'd blow into this thing and inflate it. And that was the life belts we had.
How were you feeling? What was it? I mean, were you scared or?
No, I don't remember being in any way worried. I can't remember being picked up. I was picked up the next day sometime by the Venomous. And there's a record of Herbert Button, who was the anti-submarine bosun aboard the Venomous, and that he had gone into the water many times with a rope to rescue Hecla people who were too exhausted to get up onto the ship. He did this many times, and then when the rescue operations had finished, he took to his bunk. He lapsed into a coma and died, which reminded me, of course, of greater love has no man that he lay down his life for his friends. And that was Herbert Button. Never had any recognition, neither did any officer or member of the crew of the Venomous, but they picked up well over 400 of us. When I came to, I was in the galley, which was on the deck of the Venomous. I was lying on the metal plates, and there were other bodies around me. And somebody came with a big can full of rum and a cup. And we were given a cup to drink rum from, and I was immediately sick, of course, and it was all black from the oil fuel, and we'd all got conjunctivitis because our eyes had been burned by the oil fuel, and that lasted for days, a couple of weeks probably. Two of our crew died while we were on the Venomous. Well, the Venomous took us into Casablanca, and the navigating officer, Captain John Coleman, as he later became, he was a lieutenant then, he described that the Venomous had exhausted her fuel through going around that night chasing after the submarines. And when we approached Casablanca, they had to send stokers into the oil tanks with squeegees to push the remnants of oil towards the pumps in order to get into Casablanca. When we got into Casablanca, it was all covered in smoke and flames, and what French fleets there were, including the Jean Bart, the pride of the French fleet, had all been scuttled. There was an American aircraft carrier and a cruiser, the Augusta. And Casablanca had just been taken by the Americans that morning.
And this would be the morning of the 12th, would it?
The 12th or the 13th.
You were sunk on the 11th,
weren't
you?
Yeah, the night of the 11th to 12th, yeah.
So it was the 13th,
the 12th, wasn't it? Yeah, probably the 13th by then. The Augusta dropped climbing nets so that we could scramble up onto the deck. When we appeared over the side, there was the movie camera, typical American. By this time, all I'd got was my money belt. And I thought, oh, I'm all right, I've got my money. When I eventually looked into my money belt, I'd got 4 pennies. That was my worldly goods. We were taken down to their showers and got most of the oil fuel off us. And then we were taken to their supplied area where we were kitted out as American sailors. We'd got blue shirts and dungarees, lovely leather shoes and silk socks. Then we were taken along to their messing area, the canteen, where they filled up these trays with turkey and everything else on it. And we were all sick after we'd eaten it. We were given cigarettes and sweets and put back aboard the Venomous in an hour and a half, 400 odd of us. No question of signing for anything. No, you needed it. Here we are. We were taken from the Venomous along to the alongside the aircraft carrier.